Welcome to the EMSO Talks podcast.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the EMSO Talks podcast. I'm Brett Rosen, senior economist and strategist for Latin America here at EMSO. And for the next few minutes, I wanted to give some feedback, thoughts, and overview of a recent trip that we conducted in Mexico. In terms of the trip, there were a few goals that we had in mind. The first one was to get some additional thoughts and input from local investors, political analysts, and political participants in terms of what to expect for the June 2024 presidential elections. The second area of focus related to the possibility of the central bank embarking on an easing cycle. And then the third area of interest related to nearshoring, which has been a very interesting theme in Mexico over the last couple of years. And then lastly, to get some additional points and thoughts around the recent strength in the Mexican peso. Starting with the elections, Mexico will hold its next presidential election, as mentioned, in June. Presidential elections happen every 6 years, and there are two main candidates at the moment, with the most likely victor to be Claudia Sheinbaum, who formerly mayor of Mexico City, and from the Morena Party, which is the party of current President López Obrador. She will be running against Xochitl Gálvez, who comes from kind of a alliance of opposition parties, and currently she's behind in the polls somewhere between 15 and 20%, according to some of the national polls that were recently conducted. The campaign officially started on March 1st, a couple days subsequent to our visit in Mexico. With regards to what we look for in terms of the election, it's going to be a hard-fought battle as both candidates seek to validate the support from the parties that form their coalitions. In the case of Sheinbaum, we look for her to be a little bit more conservative in her campaign, given the strong lead that she has. Her platform, for the most part, tends to resemble that of the current presidents, but coming out of some of the meetings that we conducted during our visit there, we did view her as being perhaps a little bit more pragmatic on the energy front. She has an academic background in the area as well. Potentially a little bit more open to public-private partnerships and receiving private capital into the energy sector. And on the fiscal side, Mexico is running a very large fiscal deficit in 2024. The budget contemplates a fiscal deficit above 5% of GDP, which comes on the heels of what had been a fairly austere administration under López Obrador over the prior five. With that in mind, we gather that she will look to, assuming that she wins, try to conduct a fiscal adjustment in 2025, not a large one, but perhaps get that fiscal deficit that we mentioned closer to 4 or maybe a little bit less than that. Moving on to the central bank discussion, policy rates currently in Mexico stand at 11.25%, with inflation somewhere in the neighborhood of 4.5% on a year-over-year basis. So in real terms, using the current interest rate and current inflation, the real interest rate is close to 7%. And if we look on an ex-ante basis, it's closer to 7.5%, which is well above the real neutral policy rate, which according to the central bank's estimates is below 3%. The big question here, of course, is when would the central bank look to start cutting rates, something that we've already seen in Brazil, Chile, Colombia, and in Peru. In the case of the central bank, the committee appears to be fairly split at the moment, not just in terms about when to start cutting rates, but what pace they would look to adopt as they move into the position of easing policy. There are some members of the board that tend to be more conservative and prefer to wait to see a further consolidation of disinflation in Mexico. Another board member seems to be more in line with kind of a gradual, even a stop and start move in terms of a policy easing cycle. And so there's a lot of diverse opinions within the central bank, and that is certainly a theme that came out in our meetings over the last week that when we were there. In terms of what is happening on the inflation front, similar to other Latin American countries, disinflation in Mexico has been pretty significant, but inflation, as mentioned, is still above 4%, and the target for inflation there is 3%. And if we look at inflation expectations, really for any time horizon, they have yet to converge to 3%, albeit historically Mexico has never really had inflation expectations at its target. In terms of on the economic front, the economy did slow down at the end of 2023, which presumably is encouraging some of the thought process to ease after a very strong first three quarters in 2023. The first quarter of 2024, we think, will show some pretty robust growth as much of the fiscal expenditure, especially on the transfer payment side, is concentrated in the first quarter, and the president looks to complete large infrastructure projects prior to the election to hopefully, in his view, consolidate support for his favored candidate. So we could see a bit of a fiscal cliff of sorts in Mexico later in the year, which might encourage an acceleration at some point of the easing should it start to take place as we expect in March. With a rate of 11.25, we do think that there's pretty significant space for Mexico to ease policy and at least move to a less restrictive stance throughout 2024 and also into 2025. Moving on to the third topic, nearshoring. This has been a hot buzzword that Mexican investors have been hearing about now for quite a while. And the evidence here is that nearshoring is occurring. Now, it's not necessarily appearing in foreign direct investment numbers for a variety of explanations. But when we speak to private sector investors and local business people, clearly nearshoring is a big, important theme that is underlying the breakdown of the economy at the present, especially in the northern part of the country. Nearshoring, as a reminder, is Mexico attracting investment into all sorts of operations, factories, and industry to take advantage of principally its labor cost advantage vis-a-vis other countries and, of course, the U.S., but also the proximity that Mexico has by sharing a border with the U.S. And so as many private sector companies and many firms look to diversify operations out of China and perhaps other countries worldwide, Mexico has been a recipient of increased investment attention. Now, granted, there are limitations here, which are structural in nature. They relate to, again, especially in the northern part of the country, issues around infrastructure, safety, water, electricity, energy, and labor as well. And in many cases, we hear about labor scarcity in the northern part of the country. So these are all structural issues that any government is going to have to address to hopefully maximize the benefit that Mexico can obtain from this nearshoring trend, which over time we think can increase in potential growth in Mexico. We wouldn't describe it as a seminal moment for the Mexican economy in the way in which NAFTA was in the 1990s, but it should be additive to Mexican potential growth over time. And each of the main candidates will certainly have to think about how they want to leverage the Mexican economy going forward to benefit from nearshoring. And then the fourth of the topics that we wanted to cover related to the Mexican peso, and some even call it the super peso. It's been amongst the strongest currencies in the world over the last couple of years. It's trading just north of 17 to the dollar. It's outperformed many of the Latin American emerging markets currencies for almost any period of time you can look for over the last months and couple of years. And the first question here is, what accounts for that? Well, we mentioned the high policy rate. So when you have a real interest rate of above 7% on an ex-ante basis in an investment-grade country, that's certainly attractive to some investors. So that would be point one. The second point is nearshoring, which has increased enthusiasm for the Mexican economy and for capital flows into the country. And so that would be a second theme that we would mention contributing to the strength of the peso. The third theme that has been very robust is remittances. They've been running at somewhere around $60 billion per year now for a while. So this steady flow of dollars back into Mexico has been very supportive for the peso for the last couple of years or so period of time. Fourth, we would also just point out to the strength in the U.S. economy. Clearly, the Mexican industrial sector has very strong linkages to the U.S., and so the continued strength in the U.S. relative to Europe and most other major economies of late has been also supportive for the Mexican peso. And then the last thing that we would point out around the Mexican peso is, what is the relationship around elections? Now, historically, the peso has experienced volatility around elections. If we go back and look at 2018, 2012, and back into history, and then, of course, the famous 1994 tequila crisis, the peso has been frequently vulnerable to sharp moves around elections. We think that in this particular occasion, there certainly can be some volatility driven by the election. Of course, at the present time, it looks like we get more or less policy continuity as opposed to a policy change, assuming that Sheinbaum, currently the favorite, ends up becoming the victor. That being said, we think the underpinnings are pretty much there for the peso to at least stay range-bound, albeit some weakness would be helpful, especially on the fiscal side. And also, there are certain industries and certain exporters that are losing some competitiveness due to the strength of the peso. This is a country where, you know, wages are growing somewhere in the neighborhood of 10% per year. So little by little, you could see some erosion of competitiveness if we don't get a currency adjustment, at least in a gradual fashion, to adjust for those moves in wages. So, you know, going forward, the peso should continue to be a fairly stable currency, albeit we see some weakness throughout the year, not dramatically or violently so, not similar to what we've seen in prior electoral cycles, but some gradual degree of depreciation with, of course, the November U.S. presidential election, another seminal moment. The peso did have some issues in 2016 around that presidential election in the U.S., so this is another thing to keep an eye out for. So in summary, just to cover what we've spoken about today, one is, you know, we have the election coming up in June. We expect the candidate of the Morena Party, the candidate of Lopez Obrador, to emerge victorious. At least that's what the polls show us, her holding a pretty large advantage. And we would expect her overall to be representative of continuity, but with some increased pragmatism around the energy and the fiscal side. And we do not think that her party will be able to obtain the supermajority or the two-thirds majority that would give Morena a chance to advance a number of constitutional reforms. On the central bank side, we expect rate cuts, to begin in March. We expect the cycle to be gradual. We look for a lot of split votes at central bank meetings, perhaps for some period of time. And we would expect policy to remain restrictive throughout 2024 and going into 2025. On the nearshoring front, this will continue to be a theme. There are structural limitations that prevent Mexico from taking full advantage of nearshoring, but it will be additive to economic activity and especially in the northern part of the country, providing impulse for growth. And then lastly, on the peso has been a very strong currency for a substantial period of time. We would expect that the peso should have some gradual depreciation over the course of 2024 with two large political events, one the election in Mexico, the other election in the U.S., and just the extent that the peso does look fairly fully valued compared to some other emerging markets currencies. There might be a little bit of room there for it to depreciate in line as well with the central bank that we expect to be cutting. And with that, thank you very much for joining us today on MSO Talks, and we look forward to further communications with you in the future.